So this summer, we've been in a series on the parables. And since the get-go, we've been talking about how parables are disruptive stories. That the power of a parable is actually how confusing it can be sometimes. That a parable is supposed to throw us off balance a little bit, and in doing that, wake us up a little bit. It's supposed to catch us by surprise and catch us off guard so that we start asking some questions. What we've seen is usually when dealing with parables, we don't wind up with a nice solid answer. Sometimes we end up with a bunch of other questions. Well, we're going to be dealing with a parable this morning about a dinner party. But before we get to that parable, I have a story for you. And this story comes from the sad, pitiful life of Jacob Carlson. It starts like this. Green corduroy pants and a white turtleneck. You better believe that's what I was wearing on my first day of second grade. Green corduroy pants and a white turtleneck. My family had just moved to a new part of town, and I moved to a new school, and it was the middle of the school year, so the beginning of second semester, and I started second grade in style. And so I showed up, and I was like, well, got to make some friends. The way I knew how to make friends at my previous school was sports at recess. And at Renner Elementary, I was the king of kickball. So I was like, Graydon Elementary, you don't know what's coming for you. So I show up, go to the kickball court, and I start seeing there's this phenomenon that's taking place. This one student gets up to bat, and everybody starts chanting, MJ, MJ, MJ. It's, you got to know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, Michael Jordan was the king of all sports in elementary kids' brains. Like, he only played basketball. He tried baseball, but he was the king. And so they're chanting MJ because this kid's name was Michael Hollins. Again, this is, I'm perplexed. It's standing out in the outfield just like you are. Like, I was like, why are they chanting MJ? And he gets up, and you can tell. I mean, the place is, like, electric. Like, everybody's like, MJ, MJ. He gets up, and he kicks it, and I'm out there in the outfield, and I just see this ball, can of corn. And I'm like, oh, this ball is mine. And so I catch this ball, get MJ, Michael Hollins, out. And it's the third out, so we transition. I go line up against the wall. And again, it's my first day, and I'm looking real good. I line up against the wall, and who comes over to me? MJ, Michael Hollins. He grabs me by my white turtleneck, pushes me up against the wall, slaps me in the face, and says, nobody catches my ball. No. I was like, not today. But that told me something in that moment. In that moment, I felt alive. I felt like, yeah, I got this guy out. I'm going to now kick the ball. But in that moment, I was told something. I was told, you don't belong here. You're this new kid, and you don't understand how this whole thing works. You aren't welcome here. You don't belong. Have you ever felt like you don't belong somewhere? Have you ever walked into a room and felt like, oh, I'm the odd person out. Like, I'm the one who doesn't get the joke. Or I'm the one who's not in on what's going on here. Well, this story that Jesus tells about a dinner party is about that. It's about belonging. It's about who's out and who's in. And so we're going to get to that, and we're going to look at this parable this morning. So if you will grab one of these books that's underneath you, and we have more. If you need one, just holler. And there's some up here in the front row. I knew nobody would be sitting up here except for the Zooks, so there's plenty up here. We're going to turn to page 1012. 1012. We're going to be in Luke 14, if that's more helpful for you. Luke 14, and we're going to look at this parable about belonging. Take your time. It's not a sword drill. It's not a race. We'll all get there, and we'll read it together. Anybody do sword drills, by the way, now that I made that joke? Yeah, oh my gosh, terrible, right? Okay. All right. Luke 14, we're going to start in the parable that Jesus tells starts at verse 16. So it says this. A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I have just bought a field and must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen. We've all been there. And I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. So there's this story that Jesus tells about inviting a bunch of people to a party and all of them go, yeah, sorry, can't make it. Anybody experienced that in Seattle? Something came up. Sorry, I double booked myself. I'm a little more busy than I thought. Nobody knows how to relate to this, right? So a bunch of people make excuses and they're like, sorry, we can't make it. And the guy's like, well, fine, I'm going to start inviting a bunch of other people. And it says he invites the poor, the lame, the crippled, the blind. He invites essentially outcasts, people who did not belong. And he says, they're going to come to my party. Then he even goes as far as saying, I'm going to invite people from the outer roads and the country lanes. And he says, I'm going to invite these people. Not only are they're not outcasts, they're outsiders. They're going to come to my party. So it's this interesting, crazy story. And if you have been familiar with this story in the past, either you might have been taught or you might have thought to yourself, what an amazing story about God's love. Like this amazing story that God invites those who are outcasts. The story about God who invites those who are outsiders. They get invited to this banquet. Oftentimes we think, we see God as this dinner host man, this guy who's inviting people to this party. And we go, man, look at this love and this grace that's shown to outcasts and outsiders. They get invited. The people who thought they were in and were getting invited, they're out now. And those who were told they didn't belong are told that they do belong. And it's this beautiful story of God's love. Now, the thing about parables is that parables can have multiple meanings. This doesn't make them meaningless. In fact, quite the opposite. It makes them meaningful. They are full of meaning. So while maybe in the past you or we have read this as a story about God as a host of a dinner party, this morning what I want to say is that we can actually read this in a better way if we view the host as someone other than God. What I want to say this morning is not only will this give us a more fruitful reading of this story, to not see God as the host, but I also want to suggest that it's more close to the original intent of why Jesus even told this story. So what I want us to do is shift. Maybe if that's where you've been in the past, seeing God as the host of this dinner party, we're going to shift a little bit. And in order for us to make this shift, the first thing that I want us to do is take a look at the context of what's going on in this passage. So that's why we all have this book with us right now, so we can read it together. So let's actually look at where this chapter starts, verse 1, to get an understanding of why in the world Jesus is even telling this story in the first place. So it begins like this. Chapter 14, verse 1 says this. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. Stop right there. Already, look what's going on. Jesus was invited to eat at somebody's house. The context that we have, even before we get to the story that Jesus tells, is that Jesus is at a dinner party. That's important. And who's invited him? It says a Pharisee has invited him. A prominent Pharisee has invited him. Now, who's the Pharisees? Pharisees are these religious leaders within the context of Judaism. And so they're well respected and they're well renowned by those within their religious tradition. So essentially, and it says it's a prominent Pharisee. So picture whoever, name X celebrity pastor, which the fact that that's a real thing still boggles my mind, but picture celebrity pastor, that person has invited Jesus to dinner. So it's like a big shindig. It's like, hey, I'm kind of this big deal, this prominent person and this religious person, and I'm inviting Jesus to this dinner party of mine. So that's the scene that we have here. Jesus is invited to a dinner party. Verse 2. There in front of him was a man suffering from dropsy. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him away. Then he asked them, if one of you has a son or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath, will you not immediately pull him out?" And they had nothing to say. Okay, first of all, I'm imagining most of you, like me, when reading this, are going, "What the heck is dropsy? I don't know what that is." Apparently, I'm not a medical person, but I can work a computer. So apparently, dropsy, the technical term for that now is edema, which is like the swelling of like soft tissue. So either hands, like your hands might swell up a lot, your arms, or maybe your feet. It's real big in feet, and your legs swell. It's, from my understanding, terribly uncomfortable, and they can swell quite a bit. So this man is suffering from this, and he shows up at this dinner party of a prominent religious leader, and this guy shows up, and he's there. Now, what's important to know is that this guy is most likely not supposed to be there. It's as if he stands out. He doesn't belong at this dinner party. So when we read this and we see, oh, Jesus asked the Pharisees and the experts, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath or not?" And they remained silent. And then it says in verse 6, and they had nothing to say. Have you ever been in a social situation and something happens that's terribly awkward and nobody has any idea what to say? That's what's going on here. It's not like, oh, well, we don't know the answer. These are religious experts. They have a lot of answers. But it's this social setting that throws them off. This guy's not supposed to be here. Jesus asked them a question. "Is it okay for me to heal them?" And they're like, what's going on right now? Like, this doesn't jive with this party that we've got going on here. So Jesus asks them this question, then he heals the man and he sends him off. So Jesus is at a dinner party, heals a guy who doesn't belong, and then what happens? Well, let's find out. So verse 7, it says this. When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. Now this is interesting because I'm a people watcher. Any other people watchers? Like, you could go to Pike Place, and you could just sit down and watch people. And it's not like in a creepy way. You're not like watching them like every move. You're interested in how they are doing what they're doing, how they're saying what they're saying, or the people that they're interacting with, who they're choosing to interact with, what they're doing, or how they're not paying attention to where they're walking. That's one of my favorite things, like watching people on their phone, stepping into gutters, and like that's, I love that. So if you're a people person, you get this. Jesus is noticing in this social setting how people are picking places at the table. And what it says is he notices that they're picking places of honor. So let's pause here, because we have to understand a little bit about how meals are served in the Mediterranean first century world, which is the time and the place that Jesus is in. So most meals were eaten on the floor. And what you did is you laid down like on your hip, like you sat down on your hip or your elbow or whatever, and you sat like this and you ate your meal with your right hand, right? And everybody's sitting in this kind of semicircle. And what happens is the host sits in one position, and to the right is the host's what would be like a best man or like best friend or literally a right-hand man. Okay, you jiving with me? So to the right of the host is this best man. Then to the left of the host is what's known as the guest of honor. This is the person, like, I have a friend who's in town right now, and I made him sit on my left at dinner. No, I didn't. But I would want my friend, like the guest of honor, like, you sit right here. This is where you have the most honor. And then what happens is all the way around, the rest of the way, is like a descending line of who has the most honor. So not only were these meals like a great way to eat and fill your stomach, but it was a great way to show who's who. Like, it was a great way to, like, set who's in, who's out, and how to be like, oh, I'm really in. I'm in this seat of honor. So Jesus notices that people are fighting over these seats of honor at this party. Not only are they trying to show up, but they're trying to show out, if you know what I mean. So Jesus, they're at this party trying to really, like, put on a show, like, I'm fighting for this seat of honor. Side note, by the way, I just find this interesting because I find the Bible really interesting. All of the Gospels have Judas at the Last Supper sitting as the guest of honor. Now, that's a different sermon, but that'll blow your mind. This is fun for me. So Jesus tells them this story. He says this. He says, when someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this man your seat. Then humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you'll be honored in the presence of all your fellow guests. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So basically, again, we're going to keep recapping this. Jesus is at a dinner party. He heals a dude that doesn't belong there. Then he starts watching how people are fighting for this position of guest of honor. And then he basically calls them out on it, all of them, calls them out on it. He goes, hey, let me tell you this story. You know, has anybody ever told you a story where you're like, this is a made-up story, and you just put me in the story to make a point? Like, yeah, this is exactly what Jesus is doing. So he tells them this story, and then Jesus turns to the host. I just love this. He turns to the host, and this is what he says, verse 12. Jesus said to the host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Does some of that sound familiar? Okay, so we're setting the scene for why Jesus is about to tell a story about a dinner party. And what we see is that Jesus is at a dinner party. Heals somebody there who doesn't belong. Everybody's left silent. The air has been taken out of the room because everybody's like, what the heck is going on? But then Jesus keeps going, and he calls everybody out there for what they're doing. He's like, hey, it says in verse 1 that Jesus was being carefully watched. Well, surprise, he's also been watching you. And he goes, hey, I've been noticing how you're doing this thing. Let me tell you a quick story. And then he tells them how what they're doing is just wrong, that they should be not doing that. And then he goes on to look the host square in the face and go, you shouldn't have invited any of these people. Like, you should have invited a totally different crew. Like, how in the world has Jesus not been kicked out of this party yet? Like, he is the worst guest. He's just called out everybody in the room, and then he turns to the host and says, hey, yeah, you too, you're also in the wrong. And so, again, this is where, like, I love social situations and how they can sometimes be awkward for a lot of people. This is one of those moments. Everything is awkward. And you know when somebody tries to redirect the conversation and save it? Like, hey, how about them Mariners? Or crazy weather we're having, right? Like, you have no idea what to say. This is exactly what happens in the next verse. So look at this. Verse 15, one of the people at the table says to Jesus, well, blessed is the man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. Like, oh, here, let me say this really awesome religious thing that I think will go over really well. And Jesus is like, nice try. Let me tell another story. And so then Jesus tells this story. Let's look at it again. A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. Now pause there for a moment. Because as we read the rest of this story, I want you to think about that social setting that Jesus is in. And who will those people that he's telling the story to identify as in the story? Let's look at it. A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I have just bought a field, and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to the master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there's still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. As we look at this story now, after putting it in context, as Jesus is at a dinner party and has just told all of the guests not to fight for places of honor at the table, and he has just told the host not to invite his rich friends and the people of prominence around him, but instead he tells this host to invite the poor, the lame, the crippled, the blind. And then he tells this story in which this is exactly what happens. Who do you think these people are identifying with in the story? You see, this story about a dinner party, the story about belonging, oftentimes when we read it as God is the dinner host, it can give us a great message about how God cares for the lowly. But this morning, what I want to suggest is that we're supposed to see ourselves as the dinner host. The question is not who has God invited to a host, but it is who are you willing to invite to your table? While this can be a beautiful story about God's love, it can also be a disruptive story about who are you willing to associate with. Are you going to invite all those people that you think will make you look good? You know, the people that are really attractive, the people that are really rich. Are you going to walk into the cafeteria at school, essentially, and sit at the cool kids' table? You know what I mean? Who are you willing to identify with? Now, I was reading this story and going over it this past week. And I was thinking about why is it that when I was taught this story for the first time, and why is it when I continue to read just this parable, why do I identify God as the host? Like, what? Why do I do that? Is it just that I was taught that, or what? And actually, what I came to find out of myself, and in a judgy, more cynical time of my life, also thinking about the church in general, I think that we like to identify God as the host because it takes responsibility off of us. You see, when we go, oh, God is inviting the poor, the lame, the crippled, the blind, well, then we don't have to. But when we see ourselves as the host, and we're asking that question that Jesus is asking us, who are you inviting to your party? Maybe quite literally, who are you inviting around your table? It might be a question about who are you associating with, but it might quite literally be about who are you dining with? Who are you willing to invite into your home? Who are you willing to associate with? I think sometimes we identify the host as God so that we can distance ourselves from the responsibility of caring about those who are outcasts and outsiders. You see, this is a story about belonging. But it's not whether or not I belong. It's who are you allowing to belong? Who are you inviting around the table to belong? So what do we do with this on a personal level? What do you do with this on a personal level? You hear this story about this person who throws a party and the people that get invited don't show up. And so, oh, well, we need to invite these people and go out to the outer roads and the country lanes and invite those people so that my house will be full. And we ask ourselves this question, who are we inviting around the table? What do you do with that personally? What does that mean at school? What does that mean at work? What does that mean in your neighborhood? Who are we associating with? Who are we willing to bring in? Are we willing to bring in those outcasts, those outsiders? Are we willing to allow that kid in the green corduroy pants and the white turtleneck in? Or do we say, no, you don't belong here? What does this mean for our church? Just Ballard Church. And I'm not even talking the global church right now, but what does this mean for Ballard Church? Who are we inviting into community? When we look at the demographics of our neighborhood, is that represented here in this room right now? Is it represented in your community group? Is it represented at Mary's Place when we serve at the Therapeutic Play Program? Who are we inviting as a community into this space and into other spaces of community and exploration and service? Who are we inviting around the table? Now, there are a ton of questions that I have about what do we do it with this as the global church. Now, luckily, the church has never said anybody was outside of the church. They've never outcasted anybody and said, you don't belong, you don't belong, you don't belong. What does the church do with this kind of a story of belonging? Would you pray with me? God, I thank you for this story, this weird, disruptive story. I thank you for the challenge of asking ourselves, who belongs? And not only that, but who are we allowing to belong? And how do we create environments of belonging? God, I ask for this church community that we might be a place of belonging, that all people might find a place in this space, in this community. Father, we thank you for your love. We thank you for your grace. We thank you that you do care for the poor, the lame, the blind, the crippled. May we also be people that care in such a way. We thank you, and it's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.